Great Play. Afternoon, that glorious old comedy of 18th century England, The Rivals by Richard Brinsley Sheridan. An England of a lustier, merrier day will live again as the old play's famous characters pass before us. The scene is laid in Bath, the fashionable watering place of the time. Captain Absolute, a gay young soldier, is urged by his father, Sir Anthony, to marry Lydia Langridge, whose aunt, Mrs. Nolloprop, also is favorable to the match. Lydia, however, has a mind of her own and is determined to go against her aunt's wishes, whatever they may be, and to elope romantically with a poor young ensign named Beverly. At least that is what Captain Absolute represented himself to be, knowing her desire for romance. And it is very complicated for the captain when she discovers who he is. And likewise for that worthy friend of the captain's, Bob Akers, who challenges the mythical ensign Beverly, his rival for Lydia's hand. And now a brief introduction by our 23-year-old playwright, Richard Brinsley Sheridan.
A preface to a play seems generally to be considered as a kind of closet prologue in which, if his piece has been successful, the author solicits that indulgence from the reader which he had before experienced from the audience. For my own part, I see no reason why the author of a play should not regard a first night's audience as a candid and judicious friend, attending in behalf of the public at his last rehearsal. If he can dispense with flattery, he's sure at least of sincerity. And even though the annotation be rude, he may rely upon the justness of the comment. On a street in Bath, Captain Absolute's man Fag encounters a friend.
What, Thomas? Shorty, see? What, Thomas? Thomas!
Hey? On light, Mr. Fagg! Give us your hand, my own fellow servant.
Excuse my glove, Thomas. I am devilish glad to see you, oh, lad.
Tell me, Mr. Fagg, how does young master of Sir Anthony will stare to see the captain now?
I do not serve Captain Absolute now.
Why? For sure.
At present, I am employed by Ensign Beverly.
Put on that, Mr. Fagg. You aren't changed for the better.
I have not changed, Thomas.
No? What didn't you
Captain just... Absolute and Ensign Beverly are one and the same person.
The Beverly are. Oh, well, do tell us, Mr. Flagg, the meaning on.
Why, then, the cause of all this is love.
Love?
Hearty, Thomas. My master is in love with a lady of very singular taste. A lady who likes him better as half-pay ensign than if she knew he was son and heir to Sir Anthony Absolute, a baronet of 50,000 a year.
But has she got the stuff, Mr. Flagg? Is she rich, eh?
Rich? Why, down, Thomas, you could pay the national debt as easily as I could my washerwoman.
May one hear her name?
Miss Lydia Languish. But there's a tough old aunt in the way.
Well, I wish they were once honest together.
Well, goodbye, Thomas. I have an appointment in Guy's Port this evening at 8. Meet me there. We'll make a little party.
Dressing room in Mrs. Malaprop's lodgings at Bath. Lydia Languish is sitting on a sofa when Lucy, her maid, enters.
Lad, ma'am, here is Miss Melville.
Is it possible?
My
dearest Julia, how delighted I am. How unexpected was this happiness.
True, Lydia, and our pleasure is the greater.
Oh, Julia, tell me what has conjured you to Bath. Is Sir Anthony here?
He is. We are arrived in this hour, and I suppose you will be here to see Mrs. Malaprop as soon as he is dressed.
And then, before we are interrupted, let me impart to you some of my distress. My letters have informed you of my whole connection with Beverly, but I have lost him, my Julia.
Oh.
My aunt discovered our intercourse by a note she intercepted, and has confined me ever since.
No!
Yet would you believe it? She has fallen absolutely in love with a tall Irish baronet she met one night. Since we have been here.
You guess, Lydia.
No. Upon the word, she carries on a kind of correspondence with him under a feigned name.
Then surely she is now more indulgent to her niece.
No, quite the contrary. Since she has discovered her own frailty, she has become 10 times more suspicious of mine. Then I must inform you of another plague. That odious Acres is to be in Bath today. so that I protest I shall be teased out of all endurance. Come, come, Lydia, hope for the best. Sir Anthony shall use his interest with Mrs. Malaprop.
No, but you've not heard the worst.
What? Unfortunately, I had quarreled with my poor Beverly just before my aunt made the discovery, and I've not seen him since to make it up.
And you let him depart and have not seen him since?
Because the next day my aunt found the matter out, and now I've lost him forever.
If he is as deserving and sincere as you have represented him to me, he will never give you up so. Yet consider, Lydia, he is but an ensign, and you have 30,000 pounds.
But you know I lose most of my fortune if I marry without my aunt's consent, till of age. And that is what I have determined to do ever since I knew the penalty. Nor could I love the man who would wish to wait a day for the alternative.
Nay, this is supreme.
No, no, I'm here, Mr. Anthony. Absolute. Just come home with your aunt.
Oh, I must go. Sir Anthony does not know I'm here. And if we meet, he'll detain me to show me the town. I'll take another opportunity of paying my respects to Mrs. Malaprop.
All right, ma'am. They're both coming upstairs.
Well, I'll not detain you. Adieu, my dear Julia.
Adieu. Adieu.
Here, my dear Lucy. Hide these books.
Yes, ma'am.
Quick, quick. Fling Peregrine's pickle under the sofa.
Yes.
Throw Roderick Random into the closet. Put innocent adultery into the whole beauty of man. Oh, now for them.
There, Sir Anthony, there stands the deliberate simpleton who wants to disgrace her family and lavish herself on a fellow not worth a shilling.
Madam, I thought
you won, miss. I don't know any business you have to think at all. Thought does not become a young woman. But the point we would request of you is that you will promise to forget this fellow, to eliterate him, I say, from your memory.
Oh, madam, it is not so easy to forget.
But I say it is, miss. There's nothing on earth so easy as to forget if a person chooses to set about it. I'm sure I have as much forgot your poor dear uncle as if he had never existed, and I thought it my duty to do so. And let me tell you, Lydia, these violent memories don't become a young woman.
What crime, madam, have I committed?
Now, don't attempt to extricate yourself. You know I have proved controvertible. But tell me, will you promise to do as you are bid? Will you take a husband of your aunt's choosing?
Madam, I must tell you quite plainly that had I no preference for anyone, the choice you have made would be my aversion.
What business have you, miss, with preference and aversion? They don't become a young woman. And you ought to know that his faith is in matrimony to begin with a little aversion. I'm sure I hated your poor dear uncle before marriage. And yet, miss, you are sensible what a wife I made. And that it pleased heaven to release me from him what tears I shed. But suppose we give you another choice. Will you promise us to give up this Beverly?
Could I belie my thoughts so far as to give that promise? My actions would certainly belie my words.
Take yourself to your room.
Willingly, ma'am. Willingly.
There's a little intricate hussy for you.
It's not to be wondered at, ma'am. All that is the natural consequence of teaching girls to read. In my way hither, Mrs. Malaprop, I observed your niece's maid coming forth from a circulating library.
Oh.
She had a book in each hand.
Oh, those are vile places indeed.
Madam, a circulating library in a town is as an evergreen tree of diabolical knowledge. And depend on it, Mrs. Malaprop, that they who are so fond of handling the leaves will long for the proof.
Fie, Sir Anthony. You surely speak laconically.
But why, Mrs. Malaprop, in moderation now? What would you have a woman know?
Observe me, Sir Anthony. I would by no means wish a daughter of mine to be a progeny of learning. I would send her at the age of 9 years to a boarding school in order to learn a little ingenuity and artifice. Then, sir, she should have a supercilious knowledge in accounts. And as she grew up, I would have her instructed in geometry that she might know something of the contagious countries. Above all, she should be taught orthodoxy. This, Sir Anthony, is what I would have a woman know, and I don't think there's a superstitious article in it.
Well, well, Mrs. Malaprop, I must confess that you are a truly moderate and polite arguer. For almost every third word you say is on my side of the question. But the more important point. You say you have no objection to my proposal.
None, I assure you. I am under no positive engagement with Mr. Akers. And as Lydia is so obstinate against him, perhaps your son may have better success.
Well, madam, I will write for the boy directly. He is a present to the regiment.
We've never seen your son, Sir Anthony, but I hope for no objection on his side.
Objection? Let him object if he dare. No, no, Mrs. Malaprop. Jack knows that the least of mayor puts me in a frenzy. In his younger days, boys, Jack do this. If he demurred, I knocked him down. If he grumbled, I always sent him out of the room.
I am the proper sway on my conscience. Nothing is so conciliating to young people as severity. Well, Sir Anthony, I shall give Mr. Akers his discharge and prepare Lydia to receive your son's invocations. I hope you will represent her to Captain Absolute as an object not altogether illegible.
Take my advice, Mrs. Malaprop. If she rejects his proposal, slap her under lock and key. And if you were to let the servants forget to bring her dinner for 3 or 4 days, you can't conceive how she'd come about.
We now visit Captain Absolute's lodgings as Bob Akers is announced by Fag.
Sir, Mr. Akers is below.
Yes, Fag, show the gentleman up.
Well,
No, stay, Folsom. This Akers lives within a mile of Sir Anthony, and he shall tell you how your Mistress Julia has been ever since you left her.
What, is he much acquainted in the family?
Oh, very intimate. Bob Akers is likewise a rival of mine, that is, of the other self. For he does not think his friend Captain Absolute ever saw Mistress Lydia Langley. And it is ridiculous enough to hear him complain to me of one Beverly, a conceited, skulking rival.
Oh, my dear friend, noble captain and honest Jack, how just now.
Bobby.
I've just arrived, faith, as you see. Oh, I assure your humble servant. Warm work on the road, Jack. Odds, whips, and wheels. I've traveled like a comet with a train of dust all the way.
Ah, Bob, you're indeed an eccentric vanity.
Oh.
But we know your attraction hither. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Fulton, Mr. Akers.
Oh, sir, I am heartily glad to see you. Why, this is the Mr. Fulton.
Hi, Bob. Miss Julia's Mr. Fulton.
Ah, Mr. Fulton, you're indeed a happy man.
I have not seen Miss Melville yet, sir. I hope she's well.
Never knew her better in my life, sir. Never better. So lively and entertaining, so full of wit and humor.
I must be the Jack. I only am somewhat flurried in that confounded booby head to see this.
Nay, but stay, Fulton, and thank Mr. Akers for his good news. poor Falkland.
The gentleman wasn't angry at my praising his mistress, was he?
A little jealous, I believe, Bob.
Oh, you don't say. Yes. Jealous of me. That's a good joke.
There's nothing strange in that, Bob. Let me tell you, that sprightly grace and insinuating manner of yours will do some mischief among the girls here.
Oh, you joke. Mischief. But you know, I'm not my own property. My dear Lydia has forestalled me. Jack, she could never abide me in the country because I used to dress so badly. But odds, frogs, and tambours, I'll make my clothes know who's the master. Jack, my hair has been in training for some time. Do you see these curl papers?
Indeed.
And though the side curls are a trifle restive, the hind part takes it very kindly.
Oh, you'll polish it up now.
Oh, absolutely, I propose so. Then, if I can find out this ensign, Beverly, odds, triggers, and flints, I'll make him know the distance, son.
Oh, like a man. But say, Bob, I observe you've got an odd kind of a new method of swearing.
Ah, you've taken notice of it. It is genteel, isn't it?
Very genteel, and very new indeed. And I dare say will supplant all other figures of implication.
Oh, aye. The best terms will grow obsolete. Dams have had their day.
There's a gentleman below desires to see you. Shall I show him into the parlor?
Ah, you may.
Well, I must be gone,
Jack. Say, who is it, Fag?
Your father, sir.
You puppy, why didn't you show him up directly?
Yes. You have business with Sir Anthony. I expect a message from Mrs. Malaprop at my lodging. I have sent also to my dear friend, Sir Lucius O'Trigger. Adieu, Jack. We must meet at night when you shall give me a dozen bumpers to my little Lydia.
That I will, Bob, with all my heart. Now for a parental lecture.
I hope he has heard nothing of the business that has brought me here. Oh, I wish the gout had held him fast in Devonshire.
Yes, yes, my boy.
Sir, I'm delighted to see you here and looking so well. Your sudden arrival at Bath made me apprehensive for your health.
Very apprehensive, I dare say, Jack. What? You're recruiting here, eh?
Yes, sir, I am on duty.
Well, Jack, I'm glad to see you. Jack, I've been considering that I grow old and infirm. And so probably not trouble you.
Pardon me, sir. I never saw you look more strong and hearty. And I pray fervently that you may continue.
I hope your prayers may be heard with all my heart. Well then, Jack, I've been considering that since I am so strong and hearty, I may continue to plague you for a long time. Now, Jack, I'm sensible that the income of your commission and what I have hitherto allowed you is but a small pittance for the lad of your spirit.
Sir, you're very good.
And it is my wish, while yet I live, to have my boy make some figure in the world. I have resolved, therefore, to fix you at once in a noble independence.
Sir, your kindness overpowers me. Yet, sir, I presume you would not wish me to quit the army.
Oh, that shall be as your wife, do you
think? Yes, but my
My wife, sir?
Well, settle that between you. Settle that between you.
A wife, sir, did you say?
Aye, a wife. Why, did I not mention it before?
Not a word of it.
Oh, well, so I mustn't forget it, though. Yes, Jack, the independence I was talking of is by a marriage. They forced in his saddle with a wife, but I suppose that makes no difference.
Sir, you amaze me.
What the devil's the matter with the fool? Just now you were all gratitude and duty.
Pray, sir, who is the lady?
What's that to you, sir? Come, give me your promise to love and marry her directly.
Sure, sir, this is not very reasonable to ask my affection for a lady I know nothing of.
Sure, sir, it is more unreasonable in you to object to a lady you know nothing of.
You must excuse me, sir, if I tell you once for all that in this point I cannot obey.
Archie Jack, I've heard you for some time as patient. I've been cool, quite cool. But take care. You know I am compliant itself when I'm not thwarted. No more easily led when I have my own way, but don't put me in a frenzy.
Sir, I must repeat it. In this, I cannot obey you.
Oh, tell me if I ever call you Jack again while I live.
Nay, sir, but hear
me. Sir, I won't hear a word. Not a word. Not one word. You'll give me a promise by a nod. I'll tell you what, Jack. You dog. You don't
but, sir, promise to link myself to some mass of ugliness?
No, sir, the lady shall be as ugly as I choose. She shall have a hump on each shoulder. I'll make you ogle her and sit up all night to write solace to her beauty.
This is reason and moderation, indeed.
None of your sneering, puppy. No grinning, jackanapes.
Indeed, sir, I never was in a worse humor for mirth in my life.
Tis false, sir. I know you're laughing in your sleep. I know you'll grin when I'm gone, sir.
Sir, I hope I know my duty.
None of your passion, sir. None of your passion. None of your violence, if you please. It won't do with me, I promise you.
Nay, sir, upon my word.
Do. You will fly out. Can't you be cool like me? What the devil good can passion do? Passion is a low service, you impudent, insolent, overbearing reprobate.
What, sir?
There, you sneer again. Don't provoke me. I'll disown you. I'll disinherit you. I'll unget you. And damn me, you might ever call you Jack again.
Mild, gentle, considerate father. I kiss your hand.
Assuredly, sir. Our father is roast to a degree. He goes downstairs 8 or 10 steps at a time, muttering, growling, and thumping the banisters all the way. Upon my credit, sir, were I in your place and found my father such very bad company, I should certainly drop his acquaintance.
Cease your impertinence, sir. Did you come in for nothing more? Stand out of the way.
Meanwhile, Fagg, good man that he is, has continued to interview Lucy, the maid, and discovers to Captain Absolute that it is in reality Lydia herself that the old gentleman wants him to marry. Lydia, who thinks him a penniless ensign called Beverly.
It is just as Fagg told me, indeed. My father wants to force me to marry the very girl I'm plotting to run away with. He must not know of my connection with her yet a while. He has too summary a method of proceeding in these matters. Oh, here he comes, and looking plaguey gruff.
Oh, I'll die soon enough to get him. This is my return for putting him at 12 years old into a marching regiment, and allowing him £50 a year besides his pay ever since. I've done with him. I will never see him more. Ever, 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 ever.
Now for a penitential case.
Hello, get out of my way.
You see a penitent before you.
I see an impudent scoundrel before me.
A sincere penitent. I am come, sir, to acknowledge my error and to submit entirely to your will.
What's that?
I have been revolving and reflecting and considering on your past goodness and kindness.
Well, sir?
I have been likewise weighing and balancing what you are pleased to mention concerning duty and obedience and authority.
Well, then, now you talk sense. Absolute sense. Never heard anything more sensible in my life. Confound you, you shall be Jack again.
I'm happy in the appellation.
Why then, Jack, my dear Jack, I will now inform you who the lady really is. Prepare, Jack, for wonder and rapture. Prepare. What think you of Miss Lydia Langwish?
Langwish? What? The languages of Worcestershire?
Worcestershire? No. Did you never meet Mrs. Malaprop and her niece, Miss Langwish, who came into our county just before you were last ordered to your regiment?
Malaprop? Langwish? Oh, I don't remember ever to have heard the name before.
Jack. Jack. What think you of blooming, love-breathing deputy?
As to that, sir, I'm quite indifferent. If I can please you in the matter, it is all I desire.
Nay, but Jack, such eyes. Such eyes, so innocently wild, so vastly irresolute. Not a glance but speaks and kindles some thought of love. Then Jack, her cheek, so deeply blushing at the insinuations of her telltale eyes. Then Jack, her lips. Oh, Jack, lips. If not smiling, more sweetly pouting. Then Jack hurt me.
Oh, Jack, Jack. And which is to be mine, sir? The niece or the aunt?
What?
Why, you unfeeling, insensible puppy, I despise you. When I was of your age, such a description would have made me fly like a rocket. The ant, indeed. Odd life. When I ran away with your mother, I would not have touched anything old or ugly to gain an empire.
Not to please your father, sir?
To please my father, sounds not to please. Oh, father. Oh, yes. My father, indeed, had desired. That's quite another matter. So he wasn't the indulgent father that I am, Jack.
I dare say not, sir.
But, Jack, you're not sorry to find your mistress is so beautiful.
Sir, I repeat it, if I please you in this affair, it is all I desire.
What a phlegmatic sort it is. Why, sirrah, you're an anchorite. You a soldier. You're a walking block, fit only to dust the company's regimentals on. Odd life, I've a great mind to marry the girl myself.
I'm entirely at your disposal, sir. If you should think of addressing Miss Languish yourself, I suppose you would have me marry the aunt.
Upon my word, Jack, thou art either a very great hypocrite or... Oh, but come, I know your indifference on such a subject must be all a lie. I'm sure it must be. Now, confess, Jack. Confess you have been lying, haven't you?
I'm sorry, sir, that the respect and duty which I bear to you should be so mistaken.
Go hang your respect and duty. But come along with me. I'll write a note to Mrs. Malaprop, and you shall visit the lady directly. I'll never forgive you if you don't come back stark, mad with rupture and impatience. If you don't be dead, I'll marry the girl myself.
Let us follow Captain Absolute to Mrs. Malaprop's lodging for his formal meeting with Lydia and her aunt.
Your being Sir Anthony's son, Captain, would itself be a sufficient accommodation. But from the ingenuity of your appearance, I am convinced you deserve the character given of you in this letter.
Permit me to say, ma'am, that as I have never yet had the pleasure of seeing Miss Languish, my principal inducement in this affair at present is the honor of being allied to Mrs. Malaprop, of whose intellectual accomplishments, elegant manners, and unaffected learning, no tongue is silent.
Sir, you do me infinite honor. I beg, Captain, you be seated.
Thank you.
Oh. Don't you gentlemen nowadays know how to value the ineffectual qualities in a woman? Men have no taste now but for the worthless flower of beauty.
It is but too true indeed, ma'am. Yet I fear our ladies should share the blame. They think our admiration of beauty is so great that knowledge in them would be superfluous. You, like Mrs. Malaprop, are rich in both at once.
Sir, you overpower me with good breeding. She's the very pineapple of politeness. You are not ignorant, Captain, that this giddy girl has somehow contrived to fix her attentions on a beggarly, strolling, eavesdropping ensign whom none of us have seen and nobody knows anything of.
Oh, I have heard of the silly affair before. I'm not at all prejudiced against her on that account.
I thought she had persisted in corresponding with him. But behold, this very day, I have interceded another letter from the fellow. I believe I have it here in my pocket.
Oh, that devil, my last note.
I hear it here.
My note indeed. Oh, that is a true picture.
There, perhaps you may know the writing.
I think I have seen the hand before. Yes, I certainly must have seen this hand before.
No, no, but read it, Captain.
My soul's idol, my adored Lydia. Very tender, indeed.
Tender, I am profane, too, on my conscience.
I am excessively alarmed at the intelligence you send me, the more so as my new rival.
That's you, sir.
Has universally the character of being an accomplished gentleman and a man of honor. Well, that's handsome enough.
Oh, the fellow has some design in writing so.
That he had, I'll answer for him, ma'am.
Oh, but come on, sir. Go on. You'll see presently.
As for the old weather-beaten sea dragon who guards you... Well, who can he mean by that?
Me, sir. Me. He means me there. What do you think now? But go on a little further.
Impudent scoundrel. It shall go hard, but I will elude her vigilance. As I am told that the same ridiculous vanity which makes her dress up her coarse features and deck her dull chat with hard words which she don't understand...
There, sir. An attack upon the language. What do you think of that? An aspersion upon the thoughts of speech. Whatever such a brute. Sure, if I reprehend anything in this world, it's the use of my oracular tongue and a nice derangement of epitaph.
I have a scheme to see you shortly with the old harridan's consent, and even to make her a go-between in our interview. Was ever such a story?
Did you ever hear anything like it? You'll elude my vigilance, Billy. Yes. He's very likely to enter these doors.
But say, ma'am, could I not see the lady for a few minutes now? I should like to try her temper.
Why, I don't know. I doubt she's not prepared for a visit of this kind. There is a decorum in these matters.
Oh, Lord, she won't mind me. Only tell her of Beverly.
Sir? What did you say of Beverly?
I was going to propose that you should tell her by way of guess that it was Beverly who was below. She'd come down fast enough then.
Could be a trick to well deserve. Besides, you know the fellow tells her he'll get my consent to see all this. Certainly can, I say. Lydia, come down here. You'll make me a go-between in their interview.
A go-between?
Come down, I say, Lydia.
For a laugh. It's very ridiculous, isn't it, sir, ma'am?
The little hussy won't hear. Well, I'll go and get her a sprout and tell her who she is. She will know that Captain Abbott has come to Rosanna, and I'll make her behave as becomes a young woman.
As you please, ma'am.
For the present, Captain, your servant.
Myself, oh.
She's not so laughing yet, I see.
You lose my
vigilance. Oh, yes.
One would think now that I might throw off all disguise at once and seize my prize with security. No, but such is Lydia's caprice that to this scene is worth probably to lose her. I'll turn me back and see what it is.
Oh, what a scene am I now to go through. Surely nothing can be more dreadful than to be obliged to listen to the loathsome addresses of a stranger to himself. Where stands that stupid rival? An officer, too. Oh, but how unlike my Beverly. Yeah, I wonder if he don't begin. Surely he seems a very negligent boor. Why does he do? Upon the word, I'll speak first. Mr. Absolute.
Ma'am.
Who is he?
I'm so
terrified and so overjoyed. For heaven's sake, how came you here?
Briefly, I have deceived your aunt. I was informed that my new rival was to visit here this evening, and contriving to have kept him away, have passed myself on her for Captain Abbott.
Oh, charming. And she really thinks you'll be your accident?
Oh, she convinced me.
Oh, I can't sit there laughing. Oh, to think how her sagacity is overreached.
But we trifle with our precious moments. Such another opportunity may not occur. Then let me now ask my kind, my condescending angel, to fix the time when I may rescue her from undeserved persecution by marriage.
Oh, will you then, Beverly, consent to forfeit that portion of my paltry wealth, that burden on the wings of love?
Oh, come to me, rich only thus in loveliness. Mm-hmm. Bring no portion to me but thy love. You'll be generous in you, Lydia. For well you know it is the only dowry your poor Beverly can repay.
Oh, how
strange
I have worked. How charming and coveted he is with him.
He finds out now that Beverly is in it.
Now could I fly with him to the antithesis. I don't
think you know how the little husband detests her. So pensive, Lydia. Is then your warm probation?
Warm probation? No, she's been in the past, I suppose. No, nor ever can while I have life.
And there is a little devil. She'll be in a passion all her life, will she?
So let her choice be kept in absolute. But Beverly is mine.
Thus, then, let me enforce my life.
Poor young man, down on his knees and I can contain no longer. Why, thou vixen, I have overheard you.
Oh, confound her vigilance.
Oh, Captain Absolute, I know not how to apologize for her shocking rudeness.
Oh, all things. I have hoped, Biddy.
Oh, there's nothing to be hoped for from her. She's as headstrong as an allegory on the banks of the Nile. And nay, madam, what do you charge me with now? Why, thou unblushing rebel. Didn't you tell this gentleman to his face that you loved another better? Didn't you say you never would be his? No, madam, I did not. Good heavens, what a story. Lydia, you ought to know that lying don't become a young woman. Didn't you boast that Beverly, that fool of Beverly, possessed your heart? Tell me that, I say. It is true, ma'am. And none but Beverly.
Oh,
this
illness is
so not so rude.
Nay, pray, Mrs. Mellathorpe. Don't stop the young lady's speech. She's very welcome to talk thus. She does not hurt me in the least, I assure you.
Oh, you are too good, Captain, too patient. But come with me, miss. Let us see you again soon, Captain. Remember what we have fixed.
I shall, ma'am.
Come, Lydia. Take a grateful leave of the gentleman. May every blessing light on my Beverly. My very heart. Come on.
Thank you.
we look in on another aspirant for Lydia's hand, Bob Baker, who has sent for his fiery friend, Sir Lucius O'Trigger, to help him out of the difficulty.
Mr. Baker, I'm delighted to see you.
Oh, my dear Sir Lucius, I kiss your hand.
Pray, my friend, what has brought you so suddenly to Bath?
Faith, I have followed Cupid's jack-o'-lantern and find myself in a quagmire. Oh, I have been very ill-used, Sir Lucius. I don't choose to mention names, but look upon me as a very ill-used gentleman.
Pray, what's the case? I ask no name.
Mark me, Sir Lucius. I fall as deep as need be in love with a young lady. Her friends take my part. I follow her to Bath, send word of my arrival, and receive answer that the lady is to be otherwise disposed of.
Oh, very ill upon my conscience. Pray, can you divine the cause of it?
Why, there's the matter. She has another lover, one Beverly, who I am told is now in Bath. Odd blunders and lies. He must be at the bottom of it.
A rival in the case, is there? And you think he has supplanted you unfairly?
Unfairly, to be sure he has. He never could have done it fairly.
Well, then sure you know what's to be done.
Oh, not I upon my soul.
We wear no swords here, but you understand me.
What? Fight him?
Aye, to be sure. What can I mean else?
Oh, but he has given me no provocation.
Can a man commit a more heinous offense against another than to fall in love with the same woman? Oh, by my soul, it's the most unpardonable breach of friendship.
Breach of friendship? Aye, but I have no acquaintance with this man. I never saw him in my life.
That's no argument at all. He has the less right, then, to take such a liberty.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I grow full of anger, Sir Lucius. I fire apace. Odd hilts and blades. I find a man may have a deal of valor in him and not know it. But couldn't I contrive to have a little right on my side?
What the devil signifies right when your honor is concerned?
Odd flint pans and triggers. I'll challenge him directly. Sounds. As the man in the play says, I could do such deeds.
Oh, come. There must be no passion at all in a case like this. Every thing should always be done evenly.
Oh, I must be in a passion, Sir Lucius. I must be in a rage. Oh, dear Sir Lucius, do let me be in a rage if you love me. Come, here's pen and paper. I would the ink were red. Indict, I say, indict. How shall I begin? Odd bullets and blades. I like a good bold hand, however.
Pray, compose yourself.
Come, now. Shall I begin with an oath? Oh, do, Sir Lucius. Let me begin with a damning.
Ah, do the thing decently and like a Christian. Begin now, sir.
Oh, that's too civil by heart.
Do prevent the confusion that might arise.
Well?
From our both addressing the same lady.
Aye. Both addressing the same lady. Yeah, there's the reason, the same lady. Well,
I shall expect the honor of your company.
Does company begin with a C or a K?
K. I mean C.
Oh, yes. K-O-N.
Settle our pretensions.
Well?
Let me see. Kingsmead Fields will do. In Kingsmead Fields.
So, that's done. Well, I'll fold it up. And with my own crest, a hand and a dagger, I shall seal it.
Ah, you see now, this little explanation will put a stop at once to all confusion or misunderstanding that might arise between you.
Aye, we fight to prevent any misunderstanding.
And now I leave you to fix your own time. Take my advice, and you will decide this evening if you can. Then, let the worst come of it, it will be off your mind tomorrow.
Very true. By me, fella, I should like to see you fight him first.
Huh?
Odd light. I should like to see you kill him, if it was only to give me a little lesson.
I shall be very proud of instructing you. Well, for the present. But remember now, when you meet your antagonist, do everything in a mild and agreeable manner. Let your courage be as keen, but at the same time, as polished as your sword.
Later, Akers discusses the coming duel with David.
Yeah, near a
trigger in the kingdom could make me fight when I wasn't so minded.
Oh, but my honor, David, my honor. I must be very careful of my honor.
Hey, by the mass, and I would be very careful of it. And I think in return, my honor couldn't be less than to do and be very careful of me.
What, mate, David? No gentleman will ever risk the loss of his honor.
Well, I say then it would be but civil in honor never to risk the loss of a gentleman. Looky, master, this honor seems to me to be a marvelous false friend. Now, put the case I was a gentleman, which, thank heaven, no one can say of me. Well, me honor makes me quarrel with another gentleman of my acquaintance. So we fight. Pleasant enough, sir. I kill him. The more's me luck. Now, pray, who gets the profit of it? Why, me honor. But, put the case that he kills me.
By the mass, I go to the worms, and me honor will cover to me enemy.
Oh, no, no, David. In that case, odds, crowns, and laurels. Your honor follows you to the grave.
Now, that's just the place where I could make a shift to do without you.
Oh, zounds. David, you are a coward. It doesn't become my valor to listen to you. But, David, now, you don't think there's such very, very great danger, eh? Odd life, people often fight without any mischief done.
Yeah, by the mass, I think you stand to one against this.
Wounds to meet some lion-headed fellow with his damn double-barreled sword, and he cuts and thrusts his sword. Oh, Lord bless us. It makes me tremble to think on. I suppose there ain't been so merciless a beast in the world as your loaded pistol.
Oh, don't. I won't be afraid. On fire and fury, you shan't make me afraid.
Here is the challenge, and I have sent for my dear friend Jack Absolute to carry it for me.
For my part, I wouldn't lend a hand to it for the best horse in the stable. By the mass, it don't look like another leather. I warrant it smells of gunpowder. I wouldn't swear at main sword.
Out, you poltroon! You handsome valor of a grasshopper.
I say no more. It will be sad news, but I have done. Oh, how Phyllis will howl when she hears of it. Die, poor dog. She little thinks what shooting her master's gone after.
It won't do, David. I am determined to fight. So get along, you coward.
Well, I'm in the mind, Captain Absolute, sir.
Oh, yes. Show him up. Yes.
Heaven send we be all alive. This time tomorrow.
What's that? Now, don't provoke me, David.
Goodbye, master.
Oh. Get along, you cowardly, dastardly, croaking raven.
Oh,
well, what's the matter, Bob?
Vile, cheap-hearted blackhead. If I hadn't the valor of St. George and the dragon to boot.
But what did you want with me, Bob? To Ensign Beverly.
So, what's going on now?
Well, what's this, Bob?
A challenge.
Indeed. Why, you won't fight him, will you, Bob?
Gad, but I will, Jack. Sir Lucius has brought me to it. He has left me full of rage, and I'll fight this evening. But so much good passion may not be wasted.
But what have I to do with this?
Why, as I think you know something of this fellow, I want you to find him out for me and give him this mortal defiance.
Well, give it to me, and trust me, he gets it.
Oh, thank you, my dear friend, my dear Jack. But it's giving you a great deal of trouble.
No trouble in the world, I assure you.
Oh. Well, then I must get my good friend, Sir Lucius, to second me. I shall have your good wishes, Jack, eh?
Whenever he meets you, believe.
Oh. Sir Anthony Absolute is below, inquiring for the captain.
I'll come instantly.
Very good, sir.
Well, my little hero, success attend you.
Oh, stay, Jack. Jack. If Beverly should ask you what kind of a man your friend Akers is, do tell him I'm a devil of a fellow, will you, Jack?
To be sure I shall. I'll pay your cold in the country, fighting Bob.
Right. For I don't want to take his life if I clear my honor.
No? Oh, that's very kind of you.
Well, you don't wish me to kill him, do you, Jack?
Oh, upon my soul, I do not. But a devil of a fellow, eh?
Aye, true. Oh, but stay. You may add that you never saw me in such a rage before. A most devouring rage.
I will, Bob, I will.
Remember, Jack, a determined dog.
Aye. Fighting Bob.
At Mrs. Malaprop's lodging, Sir Anthony and the captain now make a formal call.
Here we are, Mrs. Malaprop. And difficulty enough I had to bring this fellow. I don't know what's the matter, but if I had not held him by force, he'd have given me the slip.
You have infinite trouble, Sir Anthony, in the affair. Lydia, rise, I beseech you. Pay your respects.
I hope, madam, that Miss Langridge has reflected on the worth of this gentleman and the regard due to her Aunt Joyce and my alliance. Now, Jack, speak to her.
What devil shall I do? Oh, you see, sir, she won't even look at me whilst you're here. Let me entreat you, sir, to leave us together.
I won't stir a foot yet.
I'm sorry to say, Sir Anthony, that my affluence over my niece is very small. Turn around, Lydia.
May I not flatter myself that this language will assign what cause of dislike she can have to my son? Why don't you begin, Jack?
It's your puppy.
It is impossible, Sir Anthony. She can have any. She will not say she... Answer, Hussie. Why don't you answer?
And, madam, I trust that a childish and hasty predilection will be no bar to Jack's happiness.
Don't turn away. Don't you speak.
Yes.
madam... Faith, sir, I'm so confounded and so confused. I told you I should be so, sir. I knew it. The tremor of my passion entirely takes away the presence of mind.
But you don't take away your voice, fool, does it? Go up and speak to her directly. Unlock your door, sir, all right?
Now, heaven sends me to see Cullen to look around. I must disguise my voice. Will not Miss Languish lend an ear to the mild accents of true love?
What the devil is the fellow? Why don't you speak out, not stand croaking like a frog in a quinsy?
The excess of my awe and my modesty quite shook me.
Oh, your modesty again. I'll tell you what, Jack. If you don't speak out directly and glibly too, I shall be in such a rage. Mrs. Malaprop, I wish the lady would favor us with something more than a side front.
Oh, all will out, I see. Be not surprised, my Lydia. That's also private presence.
Heavens, his devilish voice. Is this possible, my Beverly? How can this be, my Beverly?
Oh, it's all over.
Beverly? The devil. Beverly? What can the girl mean? This is my son, Jack Absolute.
Oh, for shame, Hussey, for shame. Your head runs so on that fellow that you have him always in your eyes. Beg Captain Absolute's pardon directly.
I see no Captain Absolute. But my beloved Beverly.
No, the girl's mad.
Oh, and the conscience, I believe so. What do you mean by Beverly, Hussey? You saw Captain Absolute before today. There he is. Your husband that shall be.
With all my soul, man.
Oh, she's as mad as Bedlam. Or has this fellow been playing us a rogue's trick? Come here, Sarah. Who are you?
Hey, sir, I'm not quite clear myself, but I'll endeavor to recollect.
Are you my son or not? Answer for your mother. You dog, it's not for me.
Well, Anthony, most assuredly, I am your wife's son, and that I sincerely believe myself to be yours also. I hope my beauty is always shown. Mrs. Malaprop, I am your most respectful admirer, and shall be proud to add, affectionate nephew. I need not tell my Lydia that she sees her faithful Beverly, who, knowing the singular generosity of her temper, assumed that name and the station, which has proved a test of the most disinterested love, which he now hopes to enjoy in a more elevated character.
So, there will be no elopement after all.
Upon my soul, Jack, thou art a very impudent fellow. To do you justice, I think I never saw a piece of more consummate assurance.
Oh, you flatter me, sir. You compliment. It is my modesty, you know, sir. My modesty that has stood in my way.
Well, I'm glad you are not the dull, insensible varlet you pretend to be, however. I'm glad you have made a fool of your father, you dog I am. So this was your duty and obedience. I thought it was sudden. You never heard their names before, not you. What, the languages of Worcestershire, eh? Oh, if you could please me in the affairs, it's all you desired. You dissembling villain. Why, you hypocritical young rascal. I wonder you ain't ashamed to hold up your head.
This is difficulty, sir. I'm confused, very much confused, as you must have seen.
Oh, Lord, Sir Anthony, a new light breaks in upon me. What? Captain, did you write the letter then? Am I to thank you for the elegant compilation of an old, weather-beaten she-dragon, eh?
Well,
oh, mercy. Was it you that reflected on my parts of speech?
Dear sir, if you don't assist me, I shall certainly not be able to stand it.
Oh, come, Mrs. Malaprop. We must forget and forgive. Odd's life. Matters are taking so clever a turn all of a sudden that I can find in my heart to be so good-humored and so gallant, eh? Mrs. Malaprop, come, we must leave them together, Mrs. Malaprop. They long to fly into each other's arms, I want. I'm in such spirit. I don't know what I could not do. Permit me, madam. Dum-da-da-dum, dum-da-da-dum, dum-da-da-dum. Yeah, I should like to have a little fooling myself. Da-da-da-dum, 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 da-da-da-dum.
So grave, Lydia?
Sir.
What, Lydia, now that we are as happy in our friends' consensus and our mutual vows?
Friends' consent, indeed.
Come, Lydia, we must lay aside some of our romance. A little wealth and comfort may be endured after all. And for your fortune, the lawyers shall make such settlements as...
Oh, lawyers, I hate lawyers.
Nay, then, we will not wait for their lingering forms, but instantly procure the license and...
The license? I hate licenses.
Oh, my love, be not so unkind. Thus let me entreat.
Oh, what signifies kneeling when I know I must have you?
Nay, madam, there shall be no constraint upon your inclinations, I promise you. If I have lost your heart, I resign the rest. Yet I must die with a little spirit in you.
Then, sir, let me tell you what you have gained was acquired by a mean, unmanly imposition and deserves punishment. You've been treating me like a child, humoring my romance, and laughing, I suppose, at your success.
You wrong me, Lydia. You wrong me. Only hear
so
what I...
So, while I fondly imagined we were deceiving my relations and flattered myself that I could outwit and incense them all, behold, my hopes are crushed. My aunt's content, and I am myself the only dupe at last.
But Lydia,
but here, sir, here is the picture, devilish picture, which I have worn night and day in spite of stretching and speaking. There, sir. There. And be assured, I throw the original from my heart as easily.
Nay, nay, madam, we will not differ as to that. Oh. Here. Here is Miss Lydia Angle. Oh, what a difference. Aye, there is the heavenly assenting smile that first gave soul and spirit to my hope. Those are the lips which seal the vows yet scarce dry in Cupid's calendar. I'll put it back in my pocket.
Oh, it is your own doing, sir. I suppose you're perfectly satisfied.
Huh? Oh, most certainly. Oh. What signifies breaking some scores of solemn promises? Oh. All that's of no consequence, you know. Oh, to be sure, people will say that Miss didn't know her own mind. Oh. Or perhaps they may be ill-natured enough to hint that the gentleman grew tired of his lady and forsook her.
Oh, there's no bearing his insolence.
You've absorbed the ring into it a while.
This is worse than your treachery and deceit. Oh, you vomit ingrate.
What the devil's the matter now? Oh, Mrs. Malaprop, this is the oddest billing and cooing I ever heard.
Ask the lady, sir.
Oh, mercy. Why, Lydia, what is the reason of this?
Ask the gentleman, ma'am.
Jones, I shall be in a frenzy. Why, Jack, you are not come out to be anyone else, are you? Oh. Oh. Now I see it. You've been too lively, Jack.
By all the scripture, I have
no one down. Say no more, I tell you. Mrs. Malaprop shall make your peace. You must make his peace, Mrs. Malaprop. You must tell her it is Jack's way. Tell her it is all our way. It runs the blood in our family. Come away, Jack.
Mrs. Malaprop, I yearn.
And now we come to the King's Mead Field, famous dueling ground of the day, where Sir Lucius O'Trigger has brought Acres to meet the mythical devil.
By me, fellow, then, Sir Lucius, 40 yards is a good distance. At levels and aims, I say it is a good distance.
It is for a musket or a small field piece. Have on my conscience, Mr. Acres. You must leave these things to me. See now, I'll show you. There. There now. That's a very pretty distance. A pretty gentleman's distance. 10 paces, no more.
Don't. We might as well fight in a sentry box. I tell you, Sir Lucius, the farther off he is, the cooler I shall take my aim.
Ah, then I suppose you would aim at him best of all if he was out of sight.
No, Sir Lucius, but I should think 40 or 38 yards.
Ah, nonsense. 3 or 4 feet between the mouths of your pistols is as good as a mile.
Odd bulletin balls, no. By my valor, there's no merit in killing him so near.
Well, the gentleman's friend and I must settle that. Oh, but tell me now, Mr. Acres. In case of an accident, is there any will or commission I could execute for you?
I'm much obliged to you, Sir Lucius, but I do not understand.
Why, you may think there is no being shot at without a little risk. And if an unlucky bullet should carry a weight with
it. Oh, weight.
If that should be the case, would you choose to be pickled and sent home? Or to lie here in the Abbey. I am told there is very snug lying here in the Abbey.
Oh, Pickles, lying in the Abbey. I'd tremors to Lucius, don't talk so.
But I suppose, Mr. Rickers, you never were engaged in an affair of this kind before.
No, Sir Lucius, never before.
Ah, that's a pity. There's nothing like being used to a thing. Oh. Well, place yourself so. Let him see your full front.
Oh.
There. Now, a ball or two may pass clean through your body and never do you any harm at all.
Oh, a ball or two clean through me.
Right. And it's such a genteelish attitude into the bargain.
Now, look, Mr. Lucas. I just leave the shot in an awkward posture as a genteel one. So, by me, fella, I will stand edgewise.
Sure, I don't mean to disappoint you. Oh, no, Faith. I think I see them coming.
What? Coming?
Who are those yonder, getting over the stile?
Oh, there are two of them, indeed. Well, let them come, Sir Lucius. We won't run.
Run?
No, I say we won't run, by me valor.
What the devil is the matter with you?
Nothing, Sir Lucius. But I don't feel quite so bold somehow as I did.
Consider your honor. Here they are.
Oh, that I was safe at Flood Hall, or could be shot before I was aware.
Gentlemen, your most obedient. To do a kind office, first for your friend, then to proceed to business on your own account.
What? Jack, my dear friend.
Archie Bob, Beverly's at hand.
Well, Mr. Akers, I don't blame you for saluting the gentleman so civilly. Oh, Mr. Beverly, if you choose your weapon, the captain and I will measure the ground.
My weapon, sir? I'm Squire Falkland.
What? Nice, Sir Lucius. I'm not going to fight Mr. Falkland. Why, these are my particular friends.
Oh, what, sir? Did you not come here to fight, Mr. Akers?
Not I, upon my word, sir.
Well, now that's mighty provoking. But I hope, Mr. Falkland, if there are three of us, come on purpose for the game, you won't be so cantankerous as to spoil the party by sitting out.
Oh, pray, Falkland, fight to oblige Sir Lucius.
Yes, Mr. Akers is so bent on the matter.
No, Mr. Falkland. I'll bear my disappointment like a Christian. Now, look, Mr. Lucius, there's no occasion at all for me to fight.
Yeah.
And if it's the same to you, I just leave it alone.
Observe me, Mr. Akers. I must not trifle with you. You have certainly challenged somebody, and you came here to fight him. Now, if that gentleman is willing to represent him, I can't see for my soul why it isn't just the same thing.
Why, no, Sir Lucius. I tell you, it's one Beverly I have challenged. A fellow, you see, that dare not show his face.
Hold, Bob. Let me set you right. There is no such man as Beverly in the case.
Oh, what, Jack?
No. The person who assumed that name is before you. And as his pretensions are the same in both characters, he's ready to support them in whatever way you please.
Well, this is lucky.
And now you have an opportunity.
What? Quarrel with my dear friend Jack Absolute? Why not if he were 50 Beverly's? Down, Sir Lucius. You would not have me so unnatural.
On my conscience, Mr. Richard. Your valor has oozed away with a vengeance.
Not in the least. Odd facts and abettors. I'll be your second with all my heart.
Yeah.
And if you should get a quietus, you may command me entirely. And I'll get you snug lying in the abbey. Or picking you. And change over to Blunderbuck Hall or anything of the kind with the greatest of pleasure.
You're a little better than a coward.
Mind, gentlemen, he calls me a coward. Coward was the word by me, valor.
Well, sir.
Look. It is not that I mind the word coward. A coward may be said in joke. But if you had called me a poltroon, or jagged and bald.
Well, sir.
Oh, I just thought you were a very ill-bred man.
You're beneath me, no. Nay, Sir Lucius, you can't have a better second than my friend Akers. He's a most determined dog. Cold in the country, fighting Bob. He generally kills a man a week, don't you, Bob? Well, then, Captain, tis we must begin. So come out, my little counselor, and ask the gentleman whether he will resign the lady without forcing you to proceed against him.
Come on, then, sir. Since you won't let it be an amicable suit, here's my reply.
Oh, knock them all down, please, Sir Anthony. Knock down my master in particular and bind his hands over to that good behavior.
Put up, Jack, put up. I shall be in a frenzy. How came you in a duel, sir?
Hey, sir, that gentleman can tell you better than I. But he called on me. And you know, sir, I serve his majesty.
There's a pretty fellow. I catch him going to cut a man's throat. He tells me he serves his majesty.
Sir, I tell you, that gentleman called me out without explaining his reason.
Yes, sir. How came you to call my son out without explaining your reason?
Your son, sir, insulted me in a manner which my honor could not brook.
Down, Jack. How dare you insult a gentleman in a manner which his honor could not brook?
Come. Let's have no honor before ladies. Captain Absolute, come here. Here's Lydia, who's terrified to death for you.
Well, here I should be killed or escape, ma'am.
Nay, no delusions to the past. Lydia is convinced.
It is true. I offer this gentleman my hand and solicit the return of his affection.
Oh, my little angel, please.
Oh.
Sir Lucius, I perceive there must be some mistake here. With regard to the affront which you affirm I have given you, I can only say that it could not have been intentional. And as you must be convinced that I should not fear to support a real injury, you shall now see that I'm not ashamed to atone for any inadvertency. I ask your pardon, sir. But for this lady, while honored with her approbation, I will support any claim against any man whatever.
Well said, Jack. I stand by you, my boy.
Mind, I give up all my claim. I make no pretensions to anything in the world. And if I can't get a wife without fighting for her, by me, Valor, I'll live a bachelor.
Captain, give me your hand. An affront handsomely acknowledged becomes an obligation. Oh, Jack, I wish it yours. Ladies, come now. To show you that I am neither vexed nor angry, our labors and fights, I'll order the fiddles in half an hour to the new room. And I insist on your all meeting me there.
Yes, sir, like your spirit. And a night we single lads will drink a health to the young couple and a good husband to Mrs. Ballard.
All right.
It is usual, I believe, to thank the performers in a new play for the exertion of their several abilities. But where, as in this instance, their merit has been so striking and uncontroverted as to call for the warmest and truest applause from a number of judicious audiences, the poet's after-praise comes like the feeble acclamation of a child to close the shouts of a multitude. The conduct, however, of the principals in a theater cannot be so apparent to the public. I think it therefore but justice to declare that from this theater, the only one I can speak of from experience, those writers who wish to try the dramatic line will meet with that candor and liberal attention which are generally allowed to be better calculated to lead genius into excellence than either the precepts of judgment or the guidance of experience.
Closes The Rivals by Richard Binns de Sheridan, one of a series of great plays presented weekly at this hour. The cast was as follows: Sir Anthony Absolute, Charles Webster, Captain Absolute, Ian Martin, Walton, Alfred Shirley, Akers, John McGovern, Sir Lucius O'Trigger, William Kelly, Stagg, William Podmore, David, Junius Matthews, Thomas, G. Albert Smith, Mrs. Malaprop, John Owen, Lydia Languish, Ara Gerald, Julia, Kay Strozzi, Lucy, Eunice Hill, the servant, Harry Neville, and the voice of Sheridan, Eric Dresser. The orchestra was under the direction of Joseph Conti, and the program was adapted by Joseph Bell. The Great Plays series is a public service feature of the National Broadcasting Company, a drama guide giving complete background material for the Great Plays by Blevins Davis, who arranged for the series, is available to our radio audience at the cost of 25 cents. Send coin or money orders to Columbia University Press in care of Great Plays, Columbia University, New York City. Consult your local library for reading material on the remaining Great Plays of the series. Next week, at this same hour, Schiller's William Tell will be presented. The Rivals was a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York. Mm-hmm.